This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
One of the high priests of Wilsonism. One of the man whose altar upon which we look at the Seahawks quarterback, Brock Heward, steps in to explain exactly what happened in Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
I got that right, Brock, right? You're one of the founders of Wilsonism, the faith in the Seahawks quarterback.
Yes, yes. And man, was he special again last night. Gosh, he was so good. And I feel just bummed that we didn't get a chance to see him get that ball in his hands with a minute 50 to go, needing a touchdown, because I think they would have got it done. I really do. They did not have many answers for DK and Tyler and Russ's ability to create, move, and that was just a bummer. He didn't get one more shot at it.
Question one, Brock. Why doesn't Seattle use its good offense earlier in the game?
Well, Danny, because they want to limit possessions in ball games and give themselves a chance to finish it. But you can't win it in the first quarter, but you can certainly lose it. And you want to have that ability to keep close to go finish at the end. A formula, and I saw you write about it, but it's a formula for a decade that has led to more wins than any decade in the history of this franchise. More fun than we could ever imagine. And, you know, again, yesterday you had 9 possessions. All right, that was the number that you had the week before when you won in Philly. I think that's a number that Pete's very comfortable with. There's 9 possessions for each team. The fact that you give up four touchdowns and really allow Green Bay to run it out and finish it at the end. So your defense 5 out of 9 times falls flat. You're not going to win. You're just unfortunately not going to win many playoff games with that. With that kind of efficiency defensively.
If the defense was better, would they still operate in this same manner?
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would. They want to protect the football, right? I mean, neither team had a turnover yesterday. They want to protect the football. They don't, want to, see their quarterback get hit even more than he already does and gets hit as he has to create and scramble and move around. When you're down to your third string guard and your backup center and a bunch of moving pieces, and by the way, a 4th-string running back and everything else. I think this is just the methodology. You guys can dig into it a little deeper with Pete at 9:30, but this is a methodology that for 9-plus years that we sat down with him that he feels very confident in, that the results, have been pretty darn good, that a team is going to be playing with that philosophy next weekend, a road team, who went to New England, who went to Tennessee and won, very much, that style of ball. And I think yes, Paul, to answer very specifically, yes, I think this would absolutely still be the style and was when they won a world championship in nearly a second.
I want to raise my hand and say I want him to use the good offense earlier. I'd like him to do that.
I would too.
Yeah, but also understand, Danny, that some of that is when you're down, as they were, you're also going to get a different Green Bay Packers defense than the one that you get in the first quarter, right?
Fair point. Very fair point, Brock.
And I do think the Packers defense did deserve a little bit of credit for how good they were in coverage early on in this game as well. I know that Russell was awesome in the second half, but I thought they did a really good job of covering things downfield as the game went on. Question two. Brock, last night you tweeted about the Seahawks having foundational pieces in Russell Wilson, in Tyler Lockett, and DK Metcalf. But who are the other foundational pieces on this roster?
Yeah, I think he's got a bunch of them. I think Dwayne Brown is a war daddy, as he likes to say. To do what he did 20 days after surgery was truly, truly remarkable. I think, unfortunately, Will Dissly, a guy that we've seen doses of, in too small of a supply, unfortunately, the last 2 years, But I think he's the foundational piece and an incredible tight end, and has proven to be in the, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 games that he's played as a pro. So I think he's a foundational piece. DK and Tyler are absolutely foundational pieces. I think a couple of your young offensive linemen, George Fant and DeMarco Jones, made huge strides this year. Chris Carson is a foundational piece. So you got a bunch of dudes coming back offensively. Defensively, obviously, Bobby's a foundational piece. Quandre is a foundational piece. Shaquille Griffin is a foundational piece who had a brilliant season, who I didn't recognize or realize only had a couple, was that his second penalty or third penalty called on him all season long last night, as they talked through that. So he's absolutely a foundational piece. I sure hope Jadeveon Clowney gets signed up, and he would be my top priority because that guy is just an incredible, incredible football player that fits this team, that fits this style so remarkably well. So, yeah, I think those off the kind of the top of my head, the absolute 10 or so, 12 guys that you build around that are your foundational pieces long term.
This bleeds into question three. The defense, Brock, is it personnel?
Yeah.
Or is it plan? And the truth is, it's a little bit of both. But they've got to make some decisions here, because they did not play a defense capable of supporting the game plan that Pete Carroll wants to run. I mean, I think that's the underlying lesson from this season. They didn't get enough stops to play the way Pete Carroll wants. How does it get better this offseason?
Well, the good news is Top Gun Part 2 comes out this summer, and I can't wait for that. And the famous line from the original Top Gun is, I have the need for speed. And that is absolutely, to me, would be the biggest priority, because I don't think Pete Carroll is going to change his stripes. I don't think you want him to. He is who he is. He believes in his philosophy and his methodology and his scheme, and it's been so darn good for him for decades and decades and decades, collegially and professionally. So what you have to do is, in my opinion, you've got to add a lot more speed to this defense at every single level of it. If you want to play it, and you want to play it to its greatest strengths, and we saw it in 2012, in 2013, in 2014, and then, you know, the speed started to slow in 2015 with injuries and age and everything else. But if you want to play it, this group, to me, collectively, has got to get so much faster defensively. Clowney, when healthy, is absolutely that guy and can be a truly unique difference maker in this league, and has all the speed in the world at defensive line. I think Bobby still has got it. I think this year he was able to stay healthy all season long, which was enormous, and obviously one of the top tacklers, and I think he still has plenty of it over the next couple of years. I think Quandre Diggs and Shaquille, I mentioned to you earlier, have it. But outside of that, there's a lot of areas where, man, they can add some upper echelon speed and need to if they want to play this style of ball moving forward.
You mentioned speed, but size is going to be big for them, because the defensive line next season, LJ Collier is one of the guys that you're going to be hoping for more out of next year, and he wasn't even a active player for yesterday's game. You are also looking at a defense that's going to be losing Quentin Jefferson in free agency, theoretically, Al Woods. The defensive line all of a sudden is a position that has really no depth right now.
Yep. And you're going to lose Iggy Ansah. I don't think you have an interest in him.
Yeah, we're fine with
playing
that.
Football for you anymore. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of decisions there. Jaron Reed's a free agent. You're going to have to make a decision on. You mentioned Quentin Jefferson, and reports yesterday were out that he broke his foot late in that game as well. So add him to just an incredible list of injuries and the attrition, you know, VA injury by the end of the season for this ball club. But yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to make some decisions there. I didn't think Puna Ford is a guy that can play in this league, that could be a starter in this league, and was, you know, maybe did not have the sophomore step forward that you were hoping, that you were expecting, but was still a very stable piece of that group. And that is the one spot where I think there is some confidence, and I think you saw that in Al Woods this year, and obviously the move for Clowney. And they've got a pretty good eye and track record on some of those big body dudes. But I'm just talking twitch, man. You know, you're going to watch, you know, the games next weekend, and you're going to see the speed that Tennessee has offensively with a running back, and collectively defensively to do what they've done. Kansas City's speed is paramount on offense, and maybe the most collective group of speed since the greatest show on turf with the Rams. They are unbelievable. The 49ers have speed everywhere defensively and a bunch of it offensively as well. And, you know, in Green Bay, probably doesn't. And that's why I think they've got a chance to lose by double digits in that matchup. So, yeah, the need for speed, I think, is very real on that defensive side of the ball. Is you're going to continue to be a single safety, you know, match three, want to place the man kind of defensive scheme and philosophy.
That is Blue 42, which is brought to us thanks to Toyota of Puyallup. Brock Heward with us Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays during the season, and we do thank our friends at Toyota of Puyallup. That defense, it was kind of what we've seen all year. There was a 2-week stretch where you thought, okay, this might be something different. They might be turning a corner here. But ultimately, they come out of a game, and Paul pointed this out. Of their 9 third-down conversions, 6 of them were 3rd and 7 or more. 6 of those.
Yeah,
those were third down. It's similar to what happened in 2012, Brock. That was the last piece. Was their third down defense, especially third and long that year, was bad. They went out that offseason and they signed Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. The market came to them. That was fortunate. This year, they need to improve their pass rush, but their best pass rusher, Jadeveon Clowney, is going to be the best free agent that's available. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to throw money at the problem like they did before.
Yeah, you know, and it will be fascinating to see how they do it. You know, this does feel, Danny, and I know Coach Carroll said this after the game, it feels like 2012. That loss, that game, that this whole season did mirror that to me much more than the last couple of years, because not only do you have $50 to $60 million in cap space this off season to do whatever you want to do. I mean, if you want to pay Clowney $22-23 million and make him the highest paid player in the league, you absolutely can do that and still have lots of cap space and lots of room. You do have 11 draft picks. You know, you're not stuck as you were a year ago where you had to get unstuck and be creative and move on from Frank Clark and do all of that. You've got a couple first round picks in this upcoming draft, and a draft, by the way, loaded with incredible speed, albeit a little more on the offensive side, receiver and running back. But those are also, you know, I think areas where this team can continue to improve its depth too, and has to continue to replenish, which is the NFL. So yeah, it was Avril and it was Bennett that offseason in 2012. Well, look what the Green Bay Packers did this offseason with the Smith brothers, right? They made the right choice with those two guys that both had double digit sacks this season for the Packers, and a big reason that they're playing in the championship game. And, you know, you got half of it right. Clowney was absolutely half of that equation. Unfortunately, Ziggy and LJ were not. So they're gonna have to continue to remedy and yes, I think throw a lot of resources at that spot as much as any other.
Was there anything yesterday that you think defensively they could have done differently, or was this always how the season was going to end, with the defense ultimately getting knifed?
Yeah, I just, you know, I would have loved maybe a little more aggressiveness early. Danny, you talk about the Seahawks offense, you know, kind of playing their style and playing that way and playing conservatively. You know, they started to heat up Aaron a little bit in that second half. He had a really good creative, you know, stunt and sack with the Griffin brothers, which was awesome. You know, why did that have to wait till the third or fourth quarter as well, right? I mean, you can play that and have that conversation both offensively and defensively, because they did bend and they did bend and they did bend. But unfortunately, and as much as you point to that third down stat, which was absolutely the right stat yesterday, this was also 3 trips into the red zone for the Packers and 3 red zone touchdowns. And that was the killer in the second half of the season. That 78% red zone touchdowns against, you know, that was just, that, you know, that's just untenable within this scheme and style. That just does not work. That does not fit into the formula and equation to win ball games. And thus you lost 3 in the month of December, and you ultimately lose yesterday as Green Bay found ways to finish down in the red zone as they did on third down, and they move on in advance. And unfortunately, we're left here with lots and lots and lots of these conversations, I think, over the next few months.
Be interesting. We will have Pete Carroll in at 9:30, and he won't point to it, or maybe he will. But the fact that the Titans are one of the teams that's in the championship round is certainly evidence that the approach – the perception that the approach is outdated is incorrect, because the Titans got there. They don't have the quarterback that was as good as Russell Wilson, and we'll see if that is eventually exposed. But everything else, the way they play defense and the way they run the ball, is certainly cut from Seattle's template.
Yeah, we just, you know, Seahawks need to take away, Danny. You know, they needed one more. Those nine possessions each, they needed one more of those opportunities. And for four games, you know, that also didn't come here down the stretch with some of those takeaways. But, you know, this was also a game that, goodness gracious, if you could have given me one Seahawk on that IR and be available yesterday, give me Chris Carson, because his ability to move and duke and run through some arm tackles, and I think add that element, especially early in that game in that first half. He gets the ball three times on three straight, you know, carries. I think he's going to move those chains. And, you know, he's there, Derrick Henry. He's there, a foundational piece. And unfortunately, this is a league, man, with so much attrition. And those teams that can stay healthy and the four that are playing this upcoming weekend got a lot of their dudes playing. And unfortunately, the Seahawks yesterday had to fight and scrap and claw. And God bless them, man. You know, I tweeted at some point in that third quarter, yeah, it was so much fun, and it would be so much more fun to be talking about an NFC Championship game and a Super Bowl win and everything else. But as far as just being proud of a group of guys and a group of Seahawks, it's been a number of years since I can honestly say this group just made you so stinking proud to watch. Third string guard, as I mentioned, a backup center, a tackle 20 days removed from surgery, you know, backup tight ends, backup wide receivers, backup linebackers, you know, just guys get on that field, and man, they put their all into it yesterday.
Brock, we always love having you on. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Sounds great, boys.
That is Brock. You're at Blue 42, which is brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. There are two decisions that the Seahawks made. Usually when a game comes down this close, you would have a lot of game management decisions that you'd wonder about and what happened. There weren't that many in this game. Like, this wasn't a game with a ton of them. With a little less than 3 minutes to go, 2:36 left, Seattle's on its own 36 and facing 4th and 11. They punted, which I thought was the right call.
It was definitely the right call. They're at their own 36-yard line, and essentially, if you give up the ball there, the Packers don't have very far to go to get into field goal range and to make it a little bit more difficult for the Seahawks to theoretically come back, get the game-tying touchdown with a two-point conversion as well. And also, don't you have in Michael Dixon a weapon at punter? You're supposed to. And honestly, I think if Dixon does his job in that situation, and if he gets a punt that lands inside the 10 and doesn't bounce into the end zone, instead of booming a 64-yarder essentially for a touchback, we're having a totally different conversation right now. Because if the Packers were basically starting from with their own goal line right behind them, breathing down their neck, I don't know that they would do the same thing that they did on the following drive. 4th and 11, to act like with this Seahawks offense that is a manageable situation is crazy. If it had been 4th and 5, if it had been 4th and 6, okay, we can have that conversation. But I was worked up by the amount of people who were worked up that they did not go for it on 4th and 11. It's nuts to go for it on 4th and 11 when you have 3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning left.
You're staking the entire game on that conversion.
Right.
Because if you don't get it, and you're going to throw the ball, if you don't get it, Green Bay's pretty much in field goal range. Like, you're not going to, if you go for it there, you're going to put yourself in a situation where, best case scenario, you're going to need a touchdown and a 2-point conversion to tie. And so the odds, and this is where there is a reason to have sort of someone analytically minded to look at it, because this is quite a simple equation. What are the odds that you convert that 4th and 11? Like, what's the percentage chance versus the percentage chance that you get the ball back with, I don't know, little more than a minute? You'd want at least a minute. If you got the ball back with more than a minute and just being down 5, which is more likely there? And I think that the answer to that one is pretty clear, because you still had 3 timeouts. And the way things panned out, the way things went, Seattle still had, they gave up a third down, one third down, and they still had a chance to get the ball back with just under 2 minutes to go. And it took 2 third down conversions of 3rd and long. I absolutely think Seattle made the right call on that one.
And a lot of people will counter saying, okay, well, did you really expect the defense to get a stop there? Well, they did get a stop on the series before, and honestly, with all the 3rd and longs that they were facing in this game, I thought that it was simply a matter of time before they would actually get
another stop in that spot. And I remember they had that sequence right before the drive where the Seahawks drive ended with the Malik Turner drop, and you had the sack as well that set up the 4th and 11, where you had Yellow Weasel getting called, and then after
Yellow
that,
Weasel,
Yellow Weasel.
I like to think of that as the new Heisel.
I like Yellow Weasel because the Seahawks know exactly what that play is. Aaron Rodgers.
Everybody all of a sudden
more.
Started pointing.
Right. Everyone.
Cody Barton. All of the linebackers are pointing at exactly what was going to come.
I mean, it's a very noteworthy kind of audible. Like, if you hear that once in a game, I'm sure you're going to remember it for the next time around that it comes. But they got the stop there when you had the Griffin's Door blitz. It was already for you to potentially do it again. Maybe they could have been a little bit more aggressive defensively on that next series, but I mean, look, they had a 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9. If they execute on either of those plays, the Seahawks have another chance. And I think you feel this way. I think Brock felt this way. I felt this way. I think anyone who has followed the Seahawks all season long thought that if they were to get a stop in one of those two situations, which were very manageable for any defense, even a one with as many issues as this defense has, that Russell would have had the ball back again with a shot. 4th and 11, I know it's Russell Wilson. It's a Seahawks offense that had been moving the football all year. But you just gave up a sack to Preston Smith the play before. What do you think is going to happen the next play when both Za'Darius and Preston can basically just run straight up field with no consequence of potentially being taken by a screen or a run or something like that? They're probably going to get another sack.
The likelihood of Seattle converting that 4th and 11, the idea that it's more than 25%, and the downside of that, which is essentially staking everything to that, I think you had a better shot. I think your better route was the route that they chose, even though it didn't work out. It'll be interesting because one of the conversations today, Baltimore continued to be very aggressive on 4th down in their playoff game against Tennessee.
Didn't work.
They got stopped on 4th and 1 twice. All of the things that they were praised for ended up kind of getting turned around on them, and that doesn't mean they're the wrong decision. It means that it didn't work out correctly for them, even though they followed the right process. And that's going to take some guts. I'll be interested to see if John Harbaugh comes away from this season still thinking, hey, we followed the right process, or if he gets scared and intimidated by some of the criticism or feeling, hey, that's great and everything in the regular season, but when it really comes down to it and everything's on the line, you've got to be more conservative.
4th down conversion attempts get more criticism than perhaps any play in the NFL. And what's funny is it usually just boils down to execution, because a lot of times they are the correct call. Go all the way back to the last decade where you remember the Patriots were playing the Colts in that game and they decide on their own side of the field, man, our defense stinks. Let's go for it on this 4th and 2. And they end up getting it short. I think that was the correct decision. It gets lambasted after the fact. In that game that we were talking about with the Ravens and with the Titans, that's working for you all season long. Of course you go for it in that spot. And honestly, I did not hate the attempt to go for it on 4th and 4 by the Texans on that fake punt. The problem was Sorensen, who was having a really good game for Kansas City, made a fantastic open field tackle on a pretty athletic and player in Justin Reed. So these situations, we look at them and we criticize them after the fact. But in those situations, I can understand the call in all of them. A 4th and 11, I just can't. You had a lot of things still in your disposal. 4th and 11, when you go for it there, that is because you are desperate and you have nothing to lose. You had 3 timeouts. You had the 2-minute warning. You had plenty of time. Maybe if you punt the ball a little bit quicker, you get the special teams on the field a little bit more quickly after that sack on 3rd down, maybe you have a little bit more time to tinker with. But that's really my only issue in that situation. Otherwise, the 4th and 11 to punt it there, I think that was the right call.
Pete Carroll compared this team to the 2012 version, and there are some similarities. There's also a pretty important difference. We'll talk about those next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
For better or worse, I felt Seahawks were done in by their flaws yesterday. I felt that the strength of the team this season, which was Russell Wilson and what was, in my mind, the best year in his 8 seasons in the NFL, was what gave him a chance, and what did him in was the defense that had been a concern from the start. That if that's that was ultimately the story of the game. The thing that went best for you is what gave you a shot. The thing that was the worry is what did you in. some of my perspective started to change a little bit, Paul. And it was after I heard Pete Carroll talk. And I would say that he usually has the effect, listening to him has the effect of making me feel that the loss wasn't maybe as dire. This one was a little bit different, though, I thought.
What about it was different? What about it made you think that, okay, this is going in a different direction than what a lot of people maybe think it's going right now?
It was looking at this season as part of a larger process, as opposed to a one-off, hey, everything is going to be evaluated on by where they go this season and how far they get this season. And if they don't get the most out of what they could, which, look, when Russell has that kind of year, I don't want to say you should get more out of it, but you certainly could get more out of it and get farther. And looking at it as part of a larger process, and he invoked sort of what was the turning point in the franchise early on in his decade that ended up being the springboard that took Seattle to a Super Bowl the following season. He talked about the similarities between this year and 2012 in the first of our cuts here.
This is, I think, is the start of this team. I think this is, it feels like 2012 all over again. And y'all can, I don't want to talk about that game. You can go back and figure it out. But this was so similar.
Now, here's what I can say. The part of it that I understand is that loss in Atlanta, where they lost in the divisional playoff, in a game that had some similarities in terms of the offense looking pretty bad for the first half, them falling behind. That game, they fell behind by 20 points. This game, it was twice they were behind by 18, to scoring early in the second half and making you think, okay, they're going to get back in it. Then they give up a touchdown. There's this mad rally at the end. That was the game that they realized how good they were. That was the game where they realized how close they were to winning a title, and that kind of provided, in some ways, the resolve that they carried into the next season, sort of leave no doubts. And that was one of the mottos that they had. So when I heard that, I can see that similarity where that was the game that this loss to Green Bay is what convinces them how close they really are to being able to get back to that stage and get back to winning a title.
Do you think it's specifically this one, though, when there are a lot of other games like this year, specifically down the stretch, the 49ers one to be most pointed, that season finale where, I mean, they were inches away from winning the NFC West?
Certainly that there's some traits that you would see, and that in games that they've lost, there have been moments where that defense just hasn't been able to get a stop, whether it was the fourth down that Baltimore had or the 9-minute drive that the Ravens had, like the different things that have happened there has been. But that 2012 season, like the one enduring trait was them blowing late leads. They blew a lot of late leads that year. They blew a late lead in Detroit. They blew a late lead to Miami after Leon Washington had given them a return to kickoff for a touchdown. They blew games late that season. They almost blew a game in Chicago in a game that ended up starting their rally. So that was kind of their fatal flaw that year, too, was and third down defense, third and long defense specifically was the problem. And the one thing that you saw, and it would be a common trait, is how this team kept fighting back. And when Pete was asked the bigger picture, how he felt about this team, I think you hear the pride he has in how they played.
Well, we're real disappointed that we put ourselves in a position where we had to come flying back in this game. And as crazy as it seems, we went in at halftime. These guys were jacked up to go ahead and take on the challenge of coming back. And so we talked like we do about the things that we have to do to, you know, keep your mind right and your focus correct so that you can position yourself for an opportunity to come back. And they did it. They did it again. And I'm so proud of this team. I mean, this is this team. The fans that follow us and watch us, they know. And you've seen us. And I hope at home that as it started happening, you can imagine it happening again, because we surely did. And I hope that it conveyed to the people that follow us and the 12s and the great following that we have.
There are certainly things to be proud of this season. I think if you're sitting this morning really angry about what happened yesterday, you are missing the big picture, because I do think that there is something being built here. As you mentioned just a little bit ago, and that you heard a little bit ago from Pete Carroll talking about that game in 2012. If we were to put together a checklist, though, of the things that team had in 2012 and that they have now, Danny, what do they have? We know that they have the quarterback, but what else is it that they have that makes you feel confident going forward? I like that they have Lockett. I like that they have Metcalf. I think that the running back core, if healthy, is pretty good. I think that there are some nice pieces on defense in the secondary. I think that at linebacker, it's a little expensive, but I like what Cody Barton's been doing the last couple of weeks. What would you say that they have, though, from a checklist perspective that it really makes you confident going forward?
The bonds within the locker room. And I would say that that was something that they had in 2013, that there was still sort of this excitement in a bunch of young guys who were about the same age, who felt a true and deep affection for each other. And I think that that changed. Not that guys started actively loathing each other, but guys grew up and guys got married, guys had their own lives. They pulled apart that team. And I think that's a very natural progress. I think that this team in many ways, it's not the same because you now definitely have a couple of older statesmen, Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson. But I think you had a group of young guys that really came together. That team in 2012 was pretty much a finished product. They just needed to add some pass rush. And fortunately for them, they had a budget because they had a quarterback on a rookie contract. They had the best bargain maybe in the history of professional sports in Russell Wilson playing on a third-rounder's deal. And that gave them the freedom to go out and get Percy Harvin, which quite frankly didn't pay off as much as it should have for everything you gave up, and Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril. You don't quite have that. I think the defense is further off, and you're not going to have the same amount of spending room, even though you will have some spending room. To me, that's the biggest difference. But the two biggest assets they have going is you got an offense that I think you can count on and expect to be really good next year, even if you don't add a single thing to it this offseason. And you've got a group of guys and a locker room that I think is together and cohesive in a way that it hasn't been maybe since 2014 and certainly since 2015. This is how close they've become close again. And I think that's because of some of the turnover and change you've had.
The locker room might be ahead of the curve comparatively. And honestly, I wasn't there, Danny. You would know better than me than it was in 2012, just given how this season has gone. And also, I mean, going into the year, this was the fourth youngest team in the NFL. I think for those people who are frustrated this morning, that is something to remember. And that is a really good sign going forward. I mean, imagine what happens if the Seahawks this season decided, you know what, instead of playing Lano Hill the amount that we've played, why not play Marquise Blair? If we had, instead of starting Jamar Taylor at the beginning of the year, why not throw Ugo Amadi out there? Who knows what LJ Collier is going to be next season? You would think that he has to be just by default better than what he was this season. Those are three young pieces defensively, in addition to Cody Barton, who I thought was awesome in the last couple of games. I thought yesterday he looked so smart out there, staying home, staying disciplined, hitting guys, sticking them, putting his shoulder into people. So there are some pieces defensively that, yes, the defense, it has major issues. The defensive line is essentially right now, it's a blank slate. I don't know who's going to be there next season, honestly, outside of what, Puna Ford and Rasheem Green? Like, that's really all you have right now. But there are some things that they are building towards. It's just a matter of, okay, well, can the coaching staff get the most out of them? And also, are they putting them in the best possible places to succeed? Because I know a lot of people this morning are going back to the thing that they have been beating the drum for all season long. What's going on defensively with this scheme that seems every single week to be the same thing and seems to be very easy to take advantage of over the middle? And with any crossing route that is run against it, it always feels like somebody's wide open.
Certainly Seattle has a template that it has filled. It has a number of young guys we're seeing growth from. Shaquille Griffin had a great season. Trey Flowers had a really tough afternoon, but maybe he'll have a third season and take a step forward in the same way that Shaquille Griffin did. The secondary, you have Quandre Diggs, who was made a huge impact. You do have questions along that defensive line. I think there's a lot of things that are up in the air, and the third down problems, and really, it was third down that decided this game. The difference in this game was what happened partly in the red zone, but mostly on third down. And we'll trace the significance, what that means for the Seahawks going forward, and maybe more importantly, what are some steps to fix it. That's ahead on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Defensively, you should never feel a sense of relief when you are sitting on a third and a long situation. That said, it's about as close to that as you can possibly get. Unfortunately for the Seattle Seahawks yesterday, when they found themselves in third and long situations, it did not go very well for them. And it culminated with this moment as the Green Bay Packers ice the game.
Rodgers awaits the snap. He takes it. Here comes the blitz. Rodgers steps, throws over the middle. Jimmy Graham makes the catch, and he's going to have a first down. At the 35-yard line, Lano Hill made the tackle, but I think they got the spot just across the line to make. They needed 9. They got 10.
The ruling on the field stands as call. First down and Green Bay.
Danny, how are you feeling on these third and long situations? Because with every one that happened, I kept thinking to myself, they're going to get the stop this time. I don't know why I thought that, given all the defensive struggles that they've had this season, but I kept thinking to myself, they've got to make it stop on this one, right?
I felt like they were in a pretty good position. Was I confident? No. But I felt like if you give those two third and longs, if you had a 3rd and 8 and a 3rd and 9, which is what Green Bay faced on its final possession, that Seattle was going to get a stop on one of those two plays. And they didn't really come that close on the first one. That was a great throw to Devontae Adams.
It was beautiful. Yeah.
And I thought Aikman did a good job of looking at sort of how maybe the rookie Ugo Amadi misplayed that, where he gave an outside release to Adams, even though he had safety help over the top. And if that's the case, you probably would have wanted to make sure you didn't get beat to the outside. The second one with Jimmy Graham, Delano Hill's there, and he just wasn't able to get quite close enough. It was a really, really close play. It's a huge bummer. That was their fatal flaw. That was their fatal flaw this game and maybe this season, was the inability to get a stop. And I think it ties to pass rush first and foremost. I think that their difficulty on third down and in third and long tied to their pass rush.
Right, and there were some moments where the pass rush was close, but close does not get you very far against someone like Aaron Rodgers.
Because they blitzed sometimes, and that didn't seem to get it, although when they sent Shaq Griffin and Shaquem came.
Griffin's kind door.
Yeah, when they came in, that was an incredible moment. So they were able to get some, but yeah, in terms of the flaw going forward, you can't play that kind of defense. You can't allow 3 touchdowns on 3 red zone possessions to an opponent and allow an opponent to convert 9 of 14 third downs and expect to win that game, especially if you approach the first half of football the way Seattle does offensively.
There were miscommunications specifically on that first Aaron Rodgers touchdown pass to Devontae Adams. And there are other moments where it just felt like crossing routes were far too easy for this team. But I think it's alarming, and I'm not sure fixable right now. As you mentioned, Danny, the pass rush has a major problem for this team right now. When you allow the Packers to convert a 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 7 in the first quarter, a 3rd and 6 in the third, and then a 3rd and 10, a 3rd and 8, and a 3rd and 9, the one you heard, in the fourth quarter, you just can't win, period. If you put your defense in situations where that is all you have to worry about, just the pass, and the pass rush still can't get to the quarterback, something is up. It could be personnel. I think it partly is personnel on the defensive line. But also, we've been talking about the scheme all season long. The scheme
people
hasn't
talk
changed.
About it, and when we talk about scheme, people are mostly talking about Ken Norton. This might not be fair. I look at this as Pete's defense. I don't think there's anything happening on this defense that Pete is not okaying and not signing. And he brought back a guy who had been one of his defensive assistants, a guy that he had passed over for defensive coordinator previously, who had left to go do the job in Oakland. I think Pete knew what he was getting when he got him back. And I think it's because Pete wants a very specific shape to this defense. I don't think they have the personnel to excel in the scheme that they play. I think that the reason that they were so dominant in 2013 and 2014 is because they had players, and they kept it simple, and they let those players play fast and aggressive. And I think that the players they have right now either are not playing fast and aggressive despite using the same scheme, or aren't capable of playing. They're not able to make that scheme work because it is fairly simple and straightforward. And if that doesn't free players up to make plays, then what are you doing? You've got something that's fairly easy to decode. It's not like the weaknesses in this defense are new. People have known what they are.
Exactly.
It's just that Seattle's personnel before was so good that it didn't matter that what Seattle did, they did so well, and their players were so talented that, yeah, you know what the weakness is. Good luck trying to exploit it.
There has to be some element of adaptation to all teams in the NFL, and that was the big problem. They never really adapted. The same things just kept happening over and over again, and you thought to yourself, okay, well, the offense can overcome this, but it can only do that so often. And ultimately, it did them in this game that we saw yesterday. Here's Pete Carroll talking about those third down problems in yesterday's loss.
They were really great on third down. We stunk. We couldn't get off the field on third down, unfortunately, we didn't win on one-on-ones. You know, most of those were one-on-one wins. And we needed a little bit more pressure to complement, and he got to hold the ball just for a second, enough to make the great plays that he made. I thought Aaron played a terrific game, particularly in those situations. He had all the big plays tonight when he needed them. And Jimmy came through with a couple huge catches. He played great tonight. I know means a lot to him because he loves our organization and all that. It was a great effort by Jimmy tonight. And, of course, Devontae was extraordinary tonight.
A little frustrating that Jimmy Graham was the one to do you in as much. Danny, I heard one-on-ones in that comment, and you're the Pete parser here. When I hear that, to me, it sounds like he feels that execution was the issue and not the scheme.
You create one-on-ones, and you have to have guys that win those matchups. When you create a matchup where it's player-on-player, especially in a pass rush situation, that guy has to win that. That's what the scheme is designed for. You have to have moments where a guy wins that, especially if you're a defense like Seattle that doesn't blitz that much. And they didn't win those. They weren't able to get that pressure. And I don't expect Seattle to ever have the defense it had in 2013, 2014, and 2015. Part of that is it's unrealistic to expect Seattle to draft the number of Hall of Fame caliber players it did, especially in the fifth round. That's
right.
It was remarkable, and we should be grateful that we got to see that. That is not a reasonable expectation. The second reason is because your quarterback's now making $30 million a year. You don't have as much. You can't go throw money at Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett anymore. But the defense has to be better than what it is. And if it's not, you've got to change the template of how you play offense. They did not have a defense that was capable of complementing or executing or holding its weight in the kind of game plan that Pete Carroll wants to play this season.
And if they want to do this the same way going forward next season, it is somewhat like hitting your head against a wall, because it does lend itself to what we saw, the offensive lack of output in the first half. If they want to continue to establish the run, well, there are certain teams you just can't do it against, and you just have to tell yourself, you know what, this week it's not going to be that week. Remember when we were going into that game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and like the Bucs had the number one run defense of the league and one of the worst pass defenses, and it was pretty obvious what should be done in that game? It should be, to some degree, matchup based week to week. I'm not saying change your identity every single game, but the defense never really did change its identity this season. It was the same thing week in, week out. And against a guy like Aaron Rodgers, what do you think's going to happen there? It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. Former NFL wide receiver Michael Bumpus is going to join us next as we continue to break down and try to be somewhat therapeutic after the Seahawks season came to an end yesterday in Green Bay, 28-23 against the Green Bay Packers. Don't go anywhere.